Right now, we're going to change the topic, and I'm very happy to welcome to our program again Arjun Makhijani. He's president of the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research. He's the principal editor of Nuclear Wastelands, a global guide to nuclear weapons production and its health and environmental effects. And his most recent book is titled Carbon Free, Nuclear Free, A Roadmap for U.S. Energy Policy. Arjun, thanks so much for being here with us tonight.
Well, thank you very much, Scott.
We're very happy to have you back here, and we're going to have you back next month. There's so many issues now that have come to the fore involving nuclear power in particular, and a lot of other related issues that we'd like to talk to you about tonight and in the future. But this evening, I thought we'd get started by just getting an update on the situation at the nuclear power plant disaster and crisis in Fukushima, Japan. This crisis really has been torn off the front pages and the headlines of newscasts, TV, and radio for many weeks now. And we really should know more about what's happening there. It's very important. And so if you could give us a status update, that would be great.
Well, mostly it is fairly static in that there are low-level releases still going on. The very serious releases of the first few weeks, you know, have diminished considerably. The temporary cooling arrangements are going on. In the last few weeks since we talked, you know, it has become clear that the accident in terms of the meltdown was more serious, and I think they should have known initially that it was more serious. At least some people had said that, in the sense that in reactor number one, for instance, there had been a complete meltdown, and the fuel seems to have melted through the reactor vessel, so the reactor vessel does not have integrity anymore, and that might have happened in the other two reactors as well. It's going to be, you know, they have plans to put a sort of a polyethylene dome over a plastic dome over building one, and maybe later on the other buildings, a damaged building, so as to try to contain the releases and filter the air. But it's very unclear how they're going to decommission this. Now, so far as the inhabitants are concerned that have been evacuated, you know, they don't know when they're going to be able to go home. There are a lot of hot spots that are contaminated, and the hot spots actually extend in irregular patterns from the site quite a bit farther away than the zone in which people had been said, you know, stay indoors. And, you know, 20 kilometers had been evacuated, and there was a band 20 to 30 kilometers away where people were advised to stay indoors. And then outside of that, there weren't serious restrictions other than food. But as it turns out, there are people who were closer in, less than 20 kilometers, who were in areas that were not in very high radiation areas. And there were people farther away than 30 kilometers who were not under movement restrictions or advice, who were in hot spots because the pattern of fallout is quite uneven. And this also has been known since the first few weeks. So I'm afraid, you know, looking at the picture today, more than 4 months, nearly 4.5 months after the start of the accident, I think there's been a pretty serious mismanagement of the whole evacuation, radiation protection situation. Of course, it's not like Chernobyl. Chernobyl was, you know, there was a cover-up and people were allowed to be irradiated at very severe levels for quite some time before they were evacuated. That was not the case here, so I think the population's been better protected. But that's a cold comfort. Chernobyl was extremely bad in terms of public protection. And for example, recently a hot spot was found 85 miles from the site where hay had been contaminated, and contaminated beef has been found in markets as far away as Tokyo, and that should not have happened. In the first weeks, it should have been clear that hay should not be stored outside because we know fallout can happen very far. I mean, in the U.S. testing, nuclear weapons testing program, the most severely affected counties from iodine contamination of milk were not in Nevada, where the test site is. They were not in Utah, which is the next state over to the east or northeast. They were in Idaho and Montana. That's because the radiation comes down where the rain falls more intensely, where the rain falls at the same time as the fallout cloud is going over. So that wasn't a mystery. I mean, I understand there was a tsunami. So in the first days, I don't know what, you know, how anybody could expect more to be done. But I think the situation is still not much under control, much better than it was, but not good. And the path ahead is pretty murky. Oh, one more piece of update, which is that the Prime Minister of Japan has said Japan should find a way to get out of nuclear power.
Right. I want to touch on that in a moment. But there was one of the reactors, I believe it was Unit 3, used a mix of uranium and plutonium fuel, and plutonium being the most toxic substance on Earth. It's a man-made element. But Arjun Makajani, what is the problem now, and how is it being dealt with in terms of plutonium contamination at Unit 3? And I've understood that there's a spent fuel pool on top of the reactor that's exposed, or at least was exposed after initial explosions.
Yeah. Scott, let me correct you about one technical thing. Plutonium is not the most toxic substance on Earth, but plutonium is the most dangerous in a particular way. Plutonium is very radioactive, but there are substances which are much more radioactive than plutonium. But plutonium is the only quite radioactive substance with which you can also make bombs. That's what makes it the most dangerous substance. So in my mind, there's a difference between toxic and most dangerous, and the really very dangerous piece of it comes from the fact that you can also make bombs with it. But that slight correction aside, the reactor number 3 did have a mixture of plutonium and uranium as fuel. This would be probably 8 or 9% plutonium with 91% uranium. It was an experimental fuel in the sense that only about 6% of the reactor fuel was of this type. It had been used in France in 20 reactors for many years, so in that sense it was not an experiment. It was an experiment in Japan. But I don't regard that as a major part of the crisis or even a significant part of the crisis, because as a reactor operates, some of the uranium in the reactor becomes plutonium. So even in Unit 1 and Unit 2 and the rest of the uranium fuel in Unit 3 in the spent fuel pools, there's much, much more plutonium in all of those other parts of these reactors than there was in the 6% mixed oxide fuel. Now, the danger of using plutonium as a fuel in mixed oxide lies elsewhere. It lies when you separate the plutonium from spent fuel, and at that point it can be stolen, it can be used to make bombs. It lies in when you transport this, and if the transport is hijacked and the hijackers could make bombs. We're seeing the kind of havoc that terrorists can cause. We don't want that kind of havoc with nuclear materials, and certainly not with nuclear bombs. And so separating plutonium and making it into this kind of fuel carries dangers along the way. It's also more tricky to use in a reactor. But at 6% fueling, that plutonium is still pretty much in the reactors and the spent fuel pools. It's not very volatile. The radioactive contamination, there may be some contamination on site and just off site. It's a little bit unclear since we don't have good measurements. I worry about a lot of other things rather than that. I mean, it'll be a part of the problem in terms of what's going to happen with all the spent fuel and where they're going to put it and what's going to happen with all that plutonium and will the site become a nuclear dump. But that those questions will be a year from now.
Well, Arjun Makhijani, what are your biggest concerns concerning this cleanup by the government of Japan and TEPCO, the Tokyo Electric Power Company? What is are they doing things properly in a way that you think will ensure the safety of the people of Japan, given that there have been a lot of protests as well as concerns about the limits of exposure, especially for children in the area around Fukushima Prefecture? What are your top concerns there?
Well, my top concerns are really, as you said, regarding the safety of the public and the public being able to resume something resembling a normal life and the proper monitoring of the public. Fortunately, that idea that children could be exposed to the same level as workers just by going to school and playing and studying, this idea has been discarded, and they're going to try to clean up the schools and map the hot spots. That's going to take some time. I mean, there's no question that safety on a pre-accident level cannot be established, and they're going to have to struggle with this question of what kind of resettlement policy they're going to adopt. They haven't yet adopted a clear resettlement policy. This is going to be a very difficult thing because people will want to go home, and yet there are a lot of homes that are radioactively contaminated. My other sort of big set of concerns is this is a plant that is heavily damaged, that has a lot of spent fuel, and you've seen the pictures. What was destroyed in those explosions, among the other things, was the cranes that handle the spent fuel that's the highly radioactive waste that's stored near the top of the reactor building in the pools. And now the fuel from the reactors will also have to be removed. That handling equipment, the cranes and so on, and the building from which they are hung, had been destroyed in three out of four of those reactors, and we don't know the condition of the crane in the other one. I'm very concerned that this site could become a nuclear dump in a very seismic zone right on the Pacific Ocean with enormous amounts of radioactivity. I don't see that they've put forward a credible plan to actually decommission the site. There was a lot of talk of pouring concrete and, you know, burying the waste there, but you cannot leave this material on the seashore in a seismic zone. It would be very dangerous for the future to do that. And I have not seen any credible plan to decommission this site. In a way, it's a little bit early, but I think because they do have to stop the releases and achieve what they call the cold shutdown so that they're not operating in this emergency mode as they have been for 4 months now. But I think we need more seriously to think about these other questions. I'm very heartened by the Japanese Prime Minister's statement that they're going to get out of nuclear and by the fact that most of the nuclear power plants in Japan are now closed. I don't know if they're going to reopen now. 34 of the reactors, I think they have 54 or 57 reactors. About two-thirds of them, or 60% of them, are closed now. And I do not know if they're going to reopen or being given permission to reopen. And how Japan is going to cope with the power shortages, that would hold very interesting lessons for us. I think the big lesson is if you're going to phase out nuclear power, it's better to do it in an orderly way before you're confronted. These kind of accidents are fortunately rare, but the probability is not zero, and if you're going to get rid of it, it's better to decide when you have time to do it in an orderly way so you can replace the power and you're not having blackouts and shutdowns of industry and so on.
And Arjun, let's talk about Japanese Prime Minister Nato Kan's statement that nuclear power should be phased out in his country. How can the Japanese government and scientists and energy experts make the reality of what Prime Minister Naoto-kan wants to do to phase out nuclear power? How can they move that goal along pretty fast? You've done a lot of work yourself on energy research, alternative energy sources that would negate a need for nuclear power altogether. How do you think the Japanese should proceed on this?
Yeah, well, I wrote a book for the U.S. that envisioned a considerably slower plan, what, you know, in 40 years to get rid of fossil fuels and nuclear power compared to the need now. That would seem like a glacial pace. When I published my book, which you can download from our website at ieer.org, free. It seemed like it was very fast to get rid of fossil fuels and nuclear power. Now, I think, obviously, Japan will have to be a lot more efficient. They can become the efficiency capital of the world. They're also already much more efficient than the United States. But there is no energy economy in the world, including Japan or Germany or France, that's very efficient. Everybody is pretty inefficient. So this can be done the fastest. They can also deploy elements of a smart grid along with solar and wind power quite rapidly so that they can replace some of this lost power. Fortunately, Japan has a lot of geothermal energy. And, you know, geothermal energy is 24/7, so in that sense, it is similar to nuclear energy or coal-fired power plants in that you get the steam from the earth and you run a turbine and then you put the electricity in the grid. Japan has developed some, but not very much, geothermal energy. You know, it's in sensitive areas and it's in places that might be, you know, important recreationally and so on, but I think the Fukushima crisis highlights the problem that, you know, you have to make some difficult choices if you're going to choose energy sources that are more safe than nuclear. We need that, and there's going to have to be some difficult choices made. I think Japan can do it. But how fast they can do it, you know, I haven't done an independent evaluation. They can do a couple of things right away to save money in the nuclear areas where they're not generating any money or electricity. They've got a plutonium separation plant at Rokashimura, which is not yet commercially open and is not doing anything except being a sinkhole for money. They should just shut that down. They've got a breeder reactor that has operated for a very short time since it was commissioned in 1994, because it's been down after an accident, and then it had another accident after they tried to restart it just very recently. They should shut that down because it's a money sinkhole, and they should put that money into much better uses. And I think they could become a leader in smart grid energy and renewable energy, just as the Germans are doing. The Germans are going to get rid of nuclear power by 2022. I don't know what kind of a timetable the Japanese can set forth, because I would have to do the numbers, and I haven't done that.
Right. Arjun Makajani, as we close out here, your organization has tried to... You've given some thought to the lessons that we need to learn from Fukushima about the safety of nuclear power plants here in the United States. And as you look at the status of our nuclear power industry and the plants, the reactors, what do you come away with as the most important thing we need to do immediately, the government and the nuclear power utilities? What do they need to do to ensure that we don't have a horrendous accident like Fukushima?
Well, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission had a 90-day task force evaluating Fukushima. They've come out with their interim report, the 90-day report. And there are some very good things in that report. I think it's quite inadequate in most ways, but there are some very good things in it. They call the existing regulations a patchwork in some respects, and I think we need to replace that patchwork. For example, some plants have had seismic evaluations recently and some not. We're still allowing companies to do self-assessments. We need to stop a lot of laxness in regard to regulation. even though we're living in an anti-regulatory climate. We also need to stop relicensing existing plants and stop making the decisions to extend their lives and to license new plants until the lessons of Fukushima are fully clear and we understand about what needs to be done regarding safety. I think those processes really should be suspended in the sense that, you know, we don't know what the cost to fix up these reactors are going to be. For example, we have 23 reactors of the same design as the Fukushima units 1 to 4, very similar design, Mark 1 reactors, and we have 8 others called Mark 2 reactors, which are fairly similar, and they all need to be backfitted with these hydrogen vents. The hydrogen vents, venting system, and the venting system to relieve pressure. The venting systems at Fukushima did not work for a variety of reasons, but there were 4 hydrogen explosions there. Now, the task force report says we need to replace them with reliable systems, but we don't have a reliable system. And I think we need to consider more seriously whether we're going to have these reactors closed down while we figure out what to do, since we know one of their critical safety systems isn't working. We need to make sure we don't have a tragedy like Fukushima.